Hi, I'm Astrid, and I'm an alcoholic. And I want to thank the group for having me come share my experience, strength, and hope. And I want to thank Stephanie for picking me up from the airport and opening her home to me. And welcome to anyone that's new here, and welcome to the people out of town. And I hope that I can say something tonight that can help somebody. Alcoholics Anonymous changed my life and saved my life, and I'm a real alcoholic. And I had to really concede to my innermost self what that meant, because I was one of those revolving door people that went in and out and in and out and in and out. And self can't reveal self to self, and the disease is designed not to see itself. And so I think that for the most part, I wasn't armed with the facts at a subconscious level. And I had reservations, and I just kept doing the same thing over and over, expecting different results. You know, there's a lot of question on, are we born alcoholic? Do we turn alcoholic later? And I've dug into my own life, and I've dove into a lot of the pathology behind alcoholism, and they still haven't found the gene. They haven't really nailed the specific area in the brain where a child would be born with this. So my belief is that God makes perfect children, and the environment is what begins to warp them. And what I'm about to say isn't to blame my parents, because parents do the best they can, and they usually don't know that they're warping their children, or environments don't know that they're warping their children, or teachers don't know that they're warping their students, or society doesn't know what kind of harm they're inflicting. But I came from a family of chaos, and there was a lot of fighting and a lot of arguing at a very early age, a lot of screaming, a lot of yelling, and a lot of spanking. My mom's a German war survivor, and she had to grow a very strong ego in order to live through the war in Germany. So she'd spank, and she'd slap, and she'd overpunish, and so often I wasn't heard, and I couldn't express my feelings, and it was like, not now, shut up, I don't care who hit who first, you know, lock you in a room. And I remember at a really early age feeling incredibly frustrated, like so frustrated that I wanted to like tear the wings off of butterflies. I wanted to torture my younger sister. I remember even by the time I was 8 or 9, I remember wishing that my parents would die. Now, these are not normal characteristics of a healthy child, but I don't know that. I just think that that's who I am, and that I don't even, at that age, there's no way to even self-reflect. I don't even look at that, and I don't see that I might be headed for trouble. I don't even see that I might later on want to medicate and turn into an alcoholic. And when you come from chaos, what's interesting is that we can all grow different pathologies, and there can be 5 kids from the same house, and one kid winds up being 800 pounds and stuffing themselves with sugar. Another one is a video game addict. Another one is an A-type personality that just thinks, if I can just do everything perfect, if I can just get it all straight, if I can just keep it all fucking organized, I'm going to get out of here, I'm going to make it to college, and I'm just going to get out of this hellhole. Just, what time, what, where, what, is everything straight? Is it okay? We got to go on time, you know? And then there's the real alcoholic, and I'm defiant, and I'm pissed off, and I'm starting fights, and I'm blaming, and I'm noisy, and I have things like, you know, poor attention span, ADD, I don't follow directions, you know, I'm the troublemaker, I'm the class clown. And so you look at this this environment, and you can see that it's the exact same environment, but each individual child deals with their pain differently, stuffs it, or maybe is able to even process their pain through something constructive, maybe sports or art or whatever it is. So as I grow up, I can see that I'm stuffing and I'm stuffing and I'm stuffing more and more and more into the basement, and I'm becoming more and more explosive at a young age, and I have behavioral problems, I have reactive disorders, I have temper tantrums, I have anxiety problems, I pick and bite my nails down to blood, I pull and pick my hair. I can't sleep at night. I feel neurotic. I remember at a really early age, you know, my mom being a war survivor, you'd open the refrigerator and she'd have this ear all the way across the house and hear it, and she'd say something like, you know, God damn it, close the refrigerator, you're letting all the cold out, the food's gonna go bad. And you'd shut it just thinking, geez, I just was going to look for something to eat, you know. And then you'd sort of forget, and you'd open an hour later, and they'd say, close the refrigerator, everything's getting cold. Or if their air conditioner's on, you know, you'd open the door to go outside. Close the door, the house is getting warm, you're going to let all the air conditioning out. So what this does at an early age is it makes me really anxious that I'm going to waste things. And I can remember at such an early age, at like 5 or 6 years old, because I know the house we lived in, and we didn't live there that long, I remember I would lay in bed, and I would think, I wonder if I left the refrigerator open. And the food is spoiling. And it's one of those old Kenmore refrigerators with just a pull handle, you know. And I would think it so hard that it would make an obsession. And I would run in my nightie and my little tiny feet whipping through the kitchen because it's dark, you know, in the living room and everything. And I'd go up and I'd push my hands against the refrigerator door and I'd think, phew, we're not wasting electricity. The food isn't going bad. And then I'd go back into my bed and I'd lay there. And 5 minutes later I'd say, what if I didn't push the door hard enough? See, now that is a really, really tragic thing, and it sounds kind of funny, but let me tell you, I'm going to take that pathology into my life later on, and it's going to help fuel my alcoholism. And so being able to actually identify that as a child and remember that that behavior was so, I mean, I was 5, I had no business worrying about our electric bill. I had absolutely no business, but it was already wired into me. My childhood was being ripped out from under me. I'm not blaming my parents. I'm just saying my childhood was being ripped. My innocence was being ripped out from under me. All of a sudden, an over-manager and a fucking hall monitor was coming to life, and I had to worry about things that I had no business worrying about. So again, once again, I don't know how to identify these feelings. I don't know how to talk about this stuff, you know, and my mom being the hitter and the spanker, I remember just being punished over and over again, often for small infractions and for things that I didn't even know I did. You know, I remember, like, breaking a plate. Actually, it slipped out of my hands and smashing a plate on the kitchen floor and bam, just backhanded across your face. I mean, it happened so fast. And you know, like, it was an accident, but don't you say a frickin' word. You better shut up. So as I take this into my life, all of a sudden, I'm this really angry character, and I'm frustrated, and I'm pissed off, and I can't sleep at night, and I'm twisted up inside. And now, somewhere around 11 or 12 years old, I go to a party and somebody opens a Budweiser, and guess what? I take a sip of fucking Budweiser, and it does for me what I could never do for myself. And it quiets the disturbance, and all of a sudden, the refrigerator, my mom, the spankings, everything goes away, and I'm like, this is good. I like people. What sign are you? I think I have a crush. Is there more beer? What is this? And I experienced my first sense of ease and comfort ever in my life that I can remember. And it came from alcohol. And so now what's going to happen is I did not experience the phenomenon of craving, and I'm speaking about my own life. I'm speaking about my own experience. I'm not an authority for Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not even an authority anymore for my own life. There's only one ultimate authority. But I have an experience with growing into those alcoholic shoes, and I did not experience the phenomenon of craving. I liked the way it made me feel, and I liked that it shut and dumbed down the thoughts that were surfing the waves of my brain. I liked that I was more comfortable in my shoes. I liked that I could look you in the eye. I liked that I could have a deeper, more meaningful conversation because I didn't know how to relate myself to people. I didn't come from a place where we expressed our feelings and looked each other in the eye. I didn't come from a place where we apologized and said, I love you. I didn't come from a place where a family table and breaking bread was an enjoyable experience. It was punishment time. It was eat everything on the plate. It was, you know, I'm going to create a fucking eating disorder in you. You better shove that shit down your throat because we starved in a war. You know, and not knowing, again, these people don't know what they're creating. They don't know they're growing Frankenstein in the basement. They have no idea. There were no how-to books. You know, still in this day and age, I think there's not a whole lot of good parenting classes out there. It's not like everybody needs to take one. We usually just take on our lineage and the sins of our fathers and mothers and just drag it into the future, swearing I'm never going to cuss at my kids, swearing I'm never going to drink in front of them, swearing I'm never going to spank them, and all of a sudden at 3, bam, in Target, I just backhanded my kid. How the hell did that happen? Because it's wired into me. See, I mean well, but I can't do well. So as time goes on and I start drinking, I drink for the effect. And somewhere we cross over the invisible line. And it's called an invisible line because we don't see it. And I don't know when that day was. I don't know when I lost the freedom of choice. But probably somewhere around 15 years of age, I completely lost the freedom of choice. That's a very early age for a child's life to be wiped out from under them. 15, I mean, I was barely developing. And my mind told me that I was going to go to college, and I was going to be a mom, and I was going to own a home, and I was going to, I don't know, have goats and make cheese and be a hippie somewhere and have a clean life and love my children and grow corn, and I don't know, you know, like just like my mind had these ideas of this great life that I was going to have. And I was sure that that was going to all come to fruition. But what I didn't realize is I had nothing to back up those dreams and schemes. I had absolutely nothing inside of me but a broken, damaged, untreated child that was about to go and just make a whirlwind through this planet and through everybody's lives and tear my shit down over and over and over and over and over again. So, you know, you start off in relationships and you think it's going to work out, and I fall in love, and the next thing you know, because I come from such a violent household, and this isn't for everybody. Not everybody that comes from a violent household winds up with this pathology, but if you don't hit me, I don't feel loved. That is still my pathology today. I don't know that I've totally overcome it. Like, you got to be mean in order for me to feel heard. And it's a sickness. It's a really deep sickness in my wiring. Like, don't be too fucking nice because you're a pussy and a sissy. You know? And, like, normal, healthy people are like, oh, God, he was the sweetest man I ever met. I had to marry him. I just knew right away he was the nicest, like a fucking angel right out. And I'm like, are you kidding? Your husband's a wimp. You know, and somebody that's got like restraining orders and his last two wives have black eyes, I'm in love. You know, and what's really wrong is my wiring's fucked up, or we say in here my picker's broken. My picker was broken before I even knew how to pick. I mean, it was just broken. It was seriously damaged. There's something wrong with me. Really, really wrong with me. I'm going to need a lot of help. A lot of help from an early age. So now I've built this character that's pushing and shoving, that's angry, that wants to ride off on the back of a Harley, that wants to flip people off, that gets in arguments everywhere I go. Rules aren't for me. I'm pissed off. I've got entitlement issues. Don't you know who I think I am? I'm loud. I'm large. I'm in charge. And I'm just hell-bent and glory-bound. And I'm a lunatic. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to blow up every single scenario where I could possibly have a good life. And I can't, I mean well, but I can't do well. I can't show up for college. I can't show up for my job. I can't show up for my boyfriend. I swear to God, me and you, dude, we're going to be together till the fucking wheels fall off. I'm in love 6 weeks later. I hate you. The wheels fell off. I don't know how to be in a relationship. I don't know how to be monogamous. I don't know how to back it with any kind of performance. Just a lot of words and a lot of cheap talk comes out of me. I'm so damaged inside. And because the average alcoholic is not psychopathic or sociopathic, I actually feel a lot of shame and a lot of guilt. So now on top of everything else, I just duck and I kind of hide and I can't look people in the eye and I'm squatting everywhere and I'm a loser inside. And, you know, everybody's going off to college and then they're getting married and white picket fences, you know. And I don't know, you know, their parents gave them some money and a down payment and all this stuff. And I'm still sitting there going, what the hell happened to me? Like, I'm just a loser because I don't know what's wrong with me. And then I start the geographicals, you know, and I move here and I move there and I get a different job. I get a boring boyfriend. I get a nicer boyfriend. I get a meaner boyfriend. I keep switching all this stuff out there. Like Bill says in the 12 and 12, he says,
I thought the conditions drove me to drink, and when I tried to correct these conditions and found that I couldn't to my entire satisfaction, my drinking went out of hand and I became an alcoholic. It never occurred to me that I needed to change myself to meet the conditions, whatever they were. See, the disease really is designed not to see itself. Self will never reveal self to self. The disease doesn't wake up one day and say, "You're very, very, very unstable. You're very, very, very sick. You need a lot of help. You should probably go to a lockdown facility for 6 months to a year." It will never say that. Like, I've got to run this shit into the ground, big time into the ground. And you know what? I'm alpha, so hell, let's go. You know what? I'm not timid. I'm going to try everything. Let's snort and smoke and stick needles in my arms. Let's go to the dirtiest places. Let's go to the hood. Let's go, you know? Let's go. Guns blazing. And so my life over time gets worse and worse and worse, and I don't know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous, and, you know, I don't know anything about recovery, and I'm 55, you know, I don't want to make up excuses, but I just feel like don't drink and drive and all that stuff wasn't happening when I was a kid. I mean, we didn't have to have a seatbelt. We could pile 8 kids in the back of the car, for real, and just be wasted. And the town cop would go, "Oh, you're a how. You only live 3 blocks away. Go on home." I mean, we got off. I tell you, we killed our friends. We went off a cliff. We did all kinds of crazy shit. There was overdoses in our house. Nobody ever went to jail, or there was a court case, or people were held accountable for some kind of overdose or gun accident in the house. I mean, I just didn't know. I don't know what I don't know. But it really, the times have changed a lot now. It's not nearly as loose as it was then. But, you know, the fear of God certainly wasn't put in me. So anyway, I ran it till the wheels fell off the first time, and I went to AA. I couldn't take it anymore. You know, I had DUIs, and I hated my life. And in case anybody didn't know, the American Medical Association has now termed alcohol a depressant. So every morning I wake up, and I want to stick a loaded gun in my mouth and blow my fucking brains out. And I say, I'm never going to do this again, and I'm so embarrassed, and I can't believe what I did last night. Jesus Christ, I got to stop. And then every afternoon around 5 o'clock, I change my mind. And I go and have another drink. I don't change my mind. The disease changes my mind, because the disease is so much stronger than self-will. I can't do this. If I could stop this thing, you think I'd be standing here, Scottsdale, Arizona, 150 million degrees outside? Come on, man. I'd be with my husband and my 8 kids and my fucking goats somewhere. Right? No. It didn't happen that way. It just didn't happen that way. So I get sober the first time, and I come in, and, you know, they give you all these suggestions, like 90 meetings in 90 days, get a commitment, get a sponsor, get a this, just stick with the winner, stick cotton out of your ears and shove it up your ass, whatever, all the suggestions, you know, that they tell you to do. And I come in, and I do all these suggestions, but I do it from self. I do it with my intellect. I do it from my head, not from my heart. I do it because you told me, like a robot. See, I've never had a relationship with God, and I don't know what a surrender is. And at a young age, when a Germanic parent would order me to do something, you just do it. Okay, now I'm going to be good, and I'm just going to do it. You know, and in those days, you know, they were allowed to smoke, you know, clean up the ashtrays, just do whatever. And I might feel a little better for a while, but I'd still go home, and I'd hate my life, and I'd want to kill myself, and I'd compare myself to other people, and I'd still feel like a loser, and I couldn't just drive my car down the street and feel okay. And, you know, I got a boyfriend, and we just get in fights, and I think the fighting's supposed to stop. I'm in AA. Why do I want to fling a knife across the room? How is this happening? I'm sober. Wait a minute. This shouldn't be going on, you know? And I have a child in sobriety, and I bring a kid into the world, and I put her in a private school, and I start a practice, and I'm successful on the outside, and I start making money, and I've got cars, and, you know, I think that I've got it going on, but really, when I concede to my innermost self, I'm still in untreated alcoholism, or I'm dry, so dry I could spontaneously combust. And the reason being is because, like Bill Wilson says in step 8, he says, very deep, sometimes quite forgotten, damaging emotional conflicts persist below the level of consciousness. At the time of these occurrences, they may actually have given our emotions violent twists which have since discolored our personalities.
and altered our lives for the worse.
I'm so damaged. I still, with 11 years of sobriety, I need so much help. I need human help and I need spiritual help every day. There is no finishing point. It is just this huge excavating process. And I knew nothing about that my first time around. And I just sort of suit up and show up half-assed, and I hated y'all, and y'all were stupid, and if you didn't use the English language properly, you were a moron. If you had a missing tooth or maybe a shitbox car, you know, you'd show up early and set everything up, but you got a coat hanger with your muffler, so you're a loser too. See, my mind doesn't know anything about humility or what a winner is or a humble servant of God. My mind tells me about third-dimensional things, and I have this weird measuring scale about what success is, and I'm going to continue to do the same thing over and over and over and over, expecting different results, because I don't know what insanity is. I have no idea. And my mind speaks to me with great authority, and it tells me things about the world. It tells me things about what success looks like. It tells me things about how I should be treated. And I operate from that place, never thinking for one single second that maybe, just maybe, every single solitary thought that surfs the waves of my brain is infected with untreated alcoholism. I don't know it, because it's at a subconscious level, like Bill just said. I'm wired that way. I don't know what I don't know. I'm a sheeple. I'm fucking asleep. Help me. I'm nuts. I'm a nutbag. I'm a lunatic. I don't know that, though. Y'all are lunatics. I'm sane. I fucking know everything. You guys are dumb. And what that does is that completely separates me from the world, even from everybody in Alcoholics Anonymous. Eventually, I'm a winner. You guys are all losers, and I don't need to come to AA anymore. And you know what? Oh, boy, is that a dangerous place. You know what I'm saying? I don't need those meetings. I don't need to be accountable. I don't need to be transparent. I don't need to carry this message. I don't need to forgive all those fucking morons. I don't need to do anything. And I just light my own shit on fire. And you know what's going to happen. My mind starts to authorize bad behavior. I start screaming at people. I'm driving down the street, flipping people off. They're in my lane. It's my freeway. It's my world. It's my bank. It's my Starbucks line. Y'all are idiots. And I'm under so much pressure that you know what's going to happen. If you be a real alcoholic, it's going to come one day, you and the bottle, and the bottle's always going to win. Because it'll wait so patiently at every man and woman's elbow to resume its destruction. And it'll wait for years and years. And everybody in here knows some horrible story of somebody with massive double-digit sobriety that fucking went down, picked it up again, and poof, like literally gone in 6 months or a year. Or they sucked on the barrel of a loaded gun, stark raving sober because they didn't know what was wrong with them. They didn't know that the main part of the disease actually centers in the alcoholic's mind rather than their body. They still thought that the alcoholism was in the liquid, and they shot the wrong fucking guy. They killed the wrong dude. They killed the self that we're trying to get rid of in the book. The selfishness and the self-centeredness we think is the root of our trouble, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, and self-seeking. That's who we're trying to get rid of. We must be rid of this self or it's going to kill us. It's going to pick up a gun and it's going to shoot right through a coffee table into my fucking head, and I'm not even going to know it. It's going to tell me what to do. God damn, this shit's not a joke. It's a parasite, and it needs a host, and it's going to suck the life out of me and use my words and my story and my mind and my family members, and I'm going to take all you hostage right along with me, and I'm going to suffer the sickest, most hardcore alcoholic death. I don't know what freedom is. I don't know what serenity is. I don't know what peace is or live and let live. Oh, those all sound like nice words, but I don't have any relationship to this stuff. I don't have a true experience with it. The steps are there, not as a homework assignment. They're there to transform me from the inside out so that I can be a new character with no reference to the old. So as time goes on in my relapse, I've got a child, I've got a home, I've got a lot of crap to blow down. You know what? I've got bank accounts and money and cars, and here we go. Now I'm going to drag a 10-year-old through my fucking nightmare. Let's go, man. Drag her right through my wake. Watch mommy all wasted at night and hungover in the morning, puking. Mommy can't go to work. Mommy can barely pick you up from school. Mommy feels so sick. God damn it. Mommy doesn't want to hang in here this right now. And I just turn into a witch. I already was one, but like, give me some fangs and stuff, you know, to go along with it. I mean, it's just a disaster. So these people come to my house and they do this intervention and they want to take my kid, and my daughter's in a great private school. They want to keep her in the private school. And I give my child away. I'm like, just take her, man. Just take her. And I pack up all of her things. And she moves into somebody else's house. And I pack my house up. And I move into the streets. And in 2001, 2 and 3, I'm just living in the streets, drinking, turning tricks, smoking out, doing drugs, and dying that slow, slow alcoholic death where I have to fuck it so badly, I just think, how come I don't get a drive-by bullet? How come some guy doesn't chop me up? What the hell, man? Come on, where's my number? I want to get picked. I want to get out of here, but I don't have the balls to kill myself. So I just do that slow marinating thing where I have 23 cases of prostitution and 18 drug and alcohol-related cases. This is not a joke, you guys. It's my life. My life was completely destroyed. And my daughter lost mom for a long time. And you know what? It is not a joke, the damage that I inflicted on her. How do you tell a child that's a virgin, that's just growing into puberty, that your mom's a fucking hooker in the street? How in the hell? How am I going to build any bridge back to safety? How am I going to mend this life? Let me tell you right now, I lack the power to do that. Because I have so much shame and so much guilt. Let me tell you another myth around here. If y'all think that one little fourth and fifth step and sitting in the park or over at frickin' IHOP is going to get rid of all of that, you're so wrong. Because my shame and my guilt and my story is in me at a cellular level. And I got to constantly remind myself that I'm no longer running the show. I got to allow God into every single moment. Every single moment of every single day. And that's what step three is really there for, is to make a decision all the time not to go back into my mind, into the pain, into the dialogue of yesterday's and yesterday's harms and the shame and the guilt, and lead with my wound and bleed all over the place. Want to hear my story? It's worse than yours. You know? That's not who I want to be. The promises come true. You know? That I can have a new life, that I can be a new character with no reference to the old. You know, and a lot of that comes through prayer, and I hope I'm not stepping on anybody's toes by reading a little bit of Emmett Fox. Emmett Fox's Sermon on the Mount is AA historical literature, and it was the first book that Bill and Bob used. And Emmett talks about prayer a lot because he says, you ain't going to get anywhere without it, man. This is your e-ticket on the frickin' Matterhorn. Now get on it. In the absence of prayer, all that you can do is express the character that you have in whatever circumstances you find yourself. So much is the case that most of your friends would be prepared to predict beforehand what your conduct would be in various kinds of crisis. Prayer, by changing your character, makes a new reaction possible. The great essential for success in prayer, for obtaining that sense of the presence of God, which is the secret of healing yourself and of healing others, of obtaining inspiration, which is the breath of the soul, of acquiring spiritual development, is that we first attain some degree of true peace of mind. This true interior soul peace was known to the mystics as serenity, and they never tired of telling us that serenity is the grand passport to the presence of God. So I got a really quiet disturbance. Like, I have no business going back into all these stories and all these harms and all these blame games unless I'm in a position where I can help somebody and I can offer my experience, or I'm in a fourth and a fifth step or some kind of ninth step. I have no business going into the resentments of the past or peeking into the fear of the future. I have no business there. I've got to learn how to stay present because this thing's going to take me out. So as time goes on, I get arrested over and over, and I go in and out of jail. And every time I go in jail, the judge is like, how? Don't you want Prop 36, drug diversion? And I'm like, death before detox. I'm not going. No, I hate AA, you know. And I ran it till the wheels fell off and I couldn't run it anymore. And then I started going into detoxes. I still couldn't do it. Like five more rehabs. I mean, the amount of rehabs and the amount of money that's been spent on us, it would be packed to the ceiling for every dollar that was spent on all of us in here. This thing's not a joke. So finally, I go out to this place in Indio, California, the ABC Club. and I get sober out there, and somebody hands me these tapes by this guy named Bob Anderson. And for the first time in my life, I'm not saying Bob Anderson got anything over anyone. I just heard something. You can hear it anywhere from anyone. You see, God's grace is a free and an unmerited and an undeserved gift. I don't know when the top of your head's going to blow off and you're going to have a spiritual awakening. I don't have the monopoly on that. I can't even produce that. I'm a messenger, not the message. I don't know, and I'm not God either. I can't even give you anything. I really can't. I can talk about my experience, but I have nothing to really give you. You've got to rightly relate yourself to God, and you've got to be the one that prays and asks for divine spiritual assistance. So I listened to this guy, and he started this group called Primetime down on Beverly Glen and Ventura Boulevard in Sherman Oaks. And we're not the be-all, end-all. I'm not saying we've got anything above anybody else, but our format, we don't talk about drunkologues. We talk about a solution. And he was the first person that really, I heard him say, the main part of the illness actually centers in my mind rather than my body. And the alcoholism is not in the liquid. It's not in the pipe. It's not in the chocolate cake. It's not in the sex. It's not in the porn. It's not in the cutting. It's not in the burning. Those are all byproducts of trying to numb my pain. And this disease will wear all kinds of hats and faces. It has a whole frickin' wardrobe down in the basement. All kinds of new shoes and black skirts and all kinds of stuff down there. It'll come out with an outfit in the morning you never even saw before. Like, what? Now hot rod cars? I never even liked cars, you know. Sugar? I can't stand it. You know, Starbucks? You gotta be kidding. Red Bulls? My God, no. Gambling? I mean, it'll do anything to just take a detour to keep itself alive. So the main part of the illness centers in the alcoholic's mind rather than her body. And you know, let me tell you something about AA. If we don't change ourselves to meet the conditions of the youngsters out there, we could lose everything also, because there are very few real alcoholic children anymore. They're snorting psych meds and fucking Adderall and cold medicine. And the landscape of AA has changed, in case you haven't noticed. Okay? And if we only treated and sponsored real alcoholics and we got that rigid, there'd be nobody in here. Everybody's got dual, triple, quadruple, whatever, pick your poison. It's not about the substance. It's really about changing my character and looking inwardly, so I don't have to be the same woman everywhere I go, leading with my wound, infecting the world with untreated alcoholism, lowering the vibrational frequency of every relationship, tearing things apart, hurting and harming, and making more and more grudgeless, so I got to make more and more amends. That's not what this thing's about. It's about really looking inwardly. So this guy says the main part of the illness centers in my mind. So I got to start watching the thoughts that surf the waves of my brain. This is a very, very important exercise. I got to stay really awake. There's something in the basement always lurking, telling me stories about how ugly and stupid and fat and old I am. What a loser. What a chump. Nobody likes you. You said the wrong thing. You're wearing the wrong thing. They're not listening. And I got to get away from that, because let me tell you, it is not me. It is not me. It is not who God wants me to be. It's the self trying to manifest itself. It really is. It really, truly, alcoholism is a parasite. It is. There is Armageddon. There is spiritual warfare. There is darkness, and it's in me. It's in me. It's not out there. It's in me. And it says that I have to come to believe that there is a power that can restore me, which means I got to get that power and stuff it down into the basement where Psycho lives. And I got to put a bigger light on all that shenanigans and make the new character in the light this big and the dark one just this peeping little mouse. And it doesn't happen overnight. I wish we were rendered white as snow. I wish that I could just like walk on water, you know. It doesn't go that way. We're willing to walk along spiritual lines. We're not saints. We'll never be saints. That isn't even our destiny. But what can happen for us is if we continue to practice these principles in all of our affairs, we begin to have a psychic change, which means that we react and respond in different ways than never before. And we see somebody that we used to hate, and for some reason, it's just not there. Maybe God didn't put love in my heart.
but it's just not there. The hate's gone. Or a situation that used to bother me so much or caused me so much shame or so much guilt, and I can just talk about it, and if you hooked me up to electrodes, it's just a flat line. I'm not that person. Or drive by a house where your husband passed away of a heart attack and it just doesn't do anything to you. Somebody else lived in that house. Or a corner where you turn tricks and you drive by that corner and it doesn't bother you anymore because somebody else turned the trick on that corner. You see, the steps are in a logical order form and they're there to produce a psychic change. But I have to rightly relate myself to this power. So it's not a religion. It's a spiritual plan of action. Action means I've got to do something every single day. So I start to look at the thoughts that surf the waves of my brain, and I start to look at the most repetitive thoughts. And Bill Wilson, so eloquently, he talks about the instincts on Rampage, Balk and Investigation. He says, my instinct for sex, my instinct for security or approval, and my desire to be somebody in society, they far exceed their intended purpose, and they're warped, and they're infected with untreated alcoholism. So my sex instincts doesn't just mean penis and vagina. It can mean I don't look right, I don't look pretty enough, I don't have nice enough clothes, I don't look good enough for the opposite sex. It can go in all kinds of crazy places. My desire to be somebody in society, my approval instinct far exceeds its intended purpose. I have 23 prostitution cases, but you know what? Y'all better like me and love me. And I don't have to love you, but y'all better like me. That's what it says down there. Like, what? I don't even do anything to, in a healthy way, get healthy approval. I just demand it. I'm never going to get anywhere with that. I've got to see that that part of my ego is fragmented, it's broken, it's damaged, and this is not a self-help program. I'm not going to repair it. I'm going to start to sever the relationship with that self-talking mind, with those strong reactions that make me so sick. You know, sometimes you see a caller ID of a family member or somebody you used to know, and I had this dumb idea that just force yourself to go say hi, and I couldn't. I lacked the power. I couldn't. And I realized at an early part of my sobriety, and even now, sometimes I got to cut people completely out of my life. I'm not kidding. Even family members, even blood, like, cut them out of my life. Like, that's it. My God is not big enough to do this Thanksgiving turkey every year. Oh, no. I'd rather get myself a Cornish hen and sit at home and do nothing. And, you know, I have to see that that's the truth for my life. My mind wants to tell me, but you should have a big family buffet. Really? Who's talking? Somebody that's trying to hijack me and hurt me and tell me that it has a blueprint for how my life should be. I'm not going there. I don't know. I start to intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle me because I rely on a power that's in me at a cellular level. You know, Bill Wilson says on either 52 or 55, he says, you know, deep down in every man, woman, and child. Let's see. Deep down in every man, actually we're fooling ourselves because deep down in every man, woman, and child is this fundamental idea of God. It may be obscured by calamity, by pomp, by worship for other things, but in some form or another it's there. Faith in a power greater than ourselves. The miraculous demonstrations of that power in human lives are facts as old as man himself. We're wired for miracles. Can you believe it? We're wired for transformation. We're wired for enlightenment. I can't believe it. We're wired for enlightenment. We're not monkeys after all. God dang, I really thought it was Planet of the Apes. For real, I really did. We're wired for enlightenment. And you know what? Things may look the same on the outside, but something has shifted inside of me because I've skimmed off those thoughts that keep haunting me, that keep hijacking me, that keep running over and over like a bad hamster on a wheel on a dryer spin, just going, going, going. Neuroscientists will tell us that the human being has an average of 46,000 thoughts a day that surf the waves of our brain. An alcoholic has four thoughts that go 46,000 times a day.
And I may not be much, but I'm all I think about. And I can retrieve a memory from 1972, and I can flash it over across the screen like it happened yesterday. And each time I pass it across the screen, I morph it and tweak it a little bit more to my advantage so that you hurt me and you harm me. And in the end, the story that I tell myself, there's no resemblance to the original wound. I don't even know the truth from the false. I am full flight from reality, and I don't need liquor to ignite my disease. Just edge me up. Just give me a resentment. Just poke a stick at me and watch a lion come out. I can turn into a demon in 2 seconds flat. This thing is not a joke. I am the real Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, and I don't need alcohol. I just need to have a very strong opinion about something, and I'm off to the races, and there I go. I'm in darkness. I'm asleep. I have an agenda. I don't want to hear anything. I can't hear anything. So I look at step two, and I see that it's experiential. The steps aren't a race. It's not like, hey, what step are you on? We were both in rehab together. I'm on 4. Ha ha, I'm on 9. See ya, wouldn't want to be ya. It doesn't go like that. It's a process. It's a process that goes on forever. We can be in the steps over and over and over. And even that part of the step, to me, is more intellectual and more homework. It's what I do on a daily basis. It's how I drive my car. It's how I look at others. It's how I get on an airplane. I mean, they're making the seats smaller and smaller. My butt's not getting bigger. It is. The seats are getting so small. You really are touching other humans. There's no way not to, you know? That stuff used to bother me like crazy. You know, it didn't bother me today. It just didn't bother me. I just sat on the plane. It doesn't bother me. You know, I stay at Stephanie's house, and she's so nice. She asks me about the temperature in the fan. I don't know. I swear to God, I don't know if it's hot or cold. I don't know. Whatever you want to do with the thermostat. You know, somebody back in the day would ask me that, and I think, you know what? That's a good question. Let's see what we can do here with your thermostat. And I want exactly my, oh, I don't like breezes. It can't be to the left or to the right. Well, it's a little bit faster. Not quite that fast. Turn it down. I mean, I don't even know. I don't know what that is, you know. It's self trying to please self is what it is. So I look at step three, and it says that I got to make this decision. I got to turn my will and my thought life over to the care of this power. My will and my thought life. Not my will and my outer life. You know what? The freeway is not going to change. Starbucks isn't going to change. My mom is not going to change. Y'all don't have to change for me. You don't have to change for me. You don't. You don't have to like me. You don't have to approve of me. If you made a megapixel billboard all over Scottsdale about we love Astrid, it wouldn't treat my disease. I'd wake up the same sick, sorry person in untreated alcoholism tomorrow. We see it over and over. Look at Michael Jackson, the king. Whitney, the queen. Elvis, the king. Look at Donald Trump, richest man in the world. God, he looks so unhappy, that face. Do you ever break a smile? Come on, man. God, if I had a fraction of your money, how much happier I might be. Just giving some away and helping some people in these rooms, you know? So I look at this step three process, and it says to make a decision to turn my will and my thought life. So, because I'm so crazy and my mind is so infected with untreated alcoholism, I can't just do one prayer in the morning and one prayer at night. There's this whole sandwich space throughout the day that I can get in my car, and in 2 seconds flat, I think someone cut me off that probably didn't cut me off, but my ego says, and then I need to lay on my horn, and my finger needs to come up. And I'm sick inside when this happens. It doesn't feel good to be in a rage anymore. I really want to sidestep the dog crap. I don't want to be Tonya Harding in a boxing ring anymore. Please leave that to somebody else. I'd rather be alone and quiet than trying to make a point and get into arguments with people. You can have your opinion. My peace becomes my most valuable asset. Without that serenity, I cannot think and act to good purpose. I cannot maneuver through this world. So it says I got to quiet the disturbance. It says that anytime I'm disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with me.
Sometimes what's wrong with me is there's something unacceptable. There's unacceptable things that happen in our life. I don't have to accept everything. There are unacceptable things, sometimes really unacceptable. Sometimes people accuse us of crazy stuff we had nothing to do with. They get mad forever and they throw us away for this small infraction. Sometimes it hurts so much, but you know what? I can't harbor that resentment anymore, because I tell you, that resentment will stack up, and then another one will stack up, and then another one will stack up, and one day I'm going to get thirsty. One day I'm going to be at somebody's house. One day there's going to be a bottle of Vicodin. One day, you know, I've even walked or been running, I swear to God, at least three times in my 11 years, found a crack pipe with crack in it on the side of the road. You know, I want to throw up when I see it. It really makes me sick. But what if one day I found that with a rock and a push in there and I didn't feel so sick? What if I'd had a really bad 5-month mental run in untreated alcoholism? You know, it could take me out permanently. My life has to become valuable to me. It has to become important to me. My internal life, my thought life, my heart life has to become important to me. So that long journey of getting away from the intellect and being raw and vulnerable and open and receptive and living from the subconscious mind where God is, with spiritual principles, for the most part, let me tell you what the voice sounds like. It sounds like, I don't know, and I don't need to know. I don't have any answers. I don't know what they're supposed to do. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. Like, in some ways, I'm not such a great sponsor, because I'm not into herding the sheep and telling them what to do. And I can't believe you went out with him again after all that shenanigans. You know what? Girl, get your freak on and fuck that shit till the wheels fall off. Hit that shit. You know what? Don't come to me with your second and third and fourth black eye. I don't care enough. You need this experience in your life. You need it. I'm not your mom. I'm not God. I'm not the boss of the universe. I can't even manage my own life. I got to go to this power all the time and ask this power which way to turn. What should I say? How should I deal with this? What should I do? How do you want me to see this? How do you want me to think about this? Can you help me back down? Can you help me be okay? It's a full-time job for me just to treat my own disease, you know? And I know this sounds a little bit mean, but I swear, I was telling Stephanie this today, sponsorship is so overrated sometimes. These people make me so sick sometimes. I don't have a big enough God to take on all the burden. If y'all think I got all this shining armor and I just stand there with angel wings all golden and a halo, you're wrong. I got to listen to this stuff all day long sometimes. I just feel so sick at the end of the day. I think you need to suck on a loaded gun. Go ahead, jump in front of the train tracks. I don't know. Maybe you need a drink, because they don't want to do what's been laid out here. And that is, get on my knees and ask this power for divine assistance. Nobody can give this to you. Nobody could give this to me. I got to do this thing. Every minute of every day, I got to keep asking this power, could you help me? Could you be with me? Can you protect me from my mind? My mind is infected with a disease. It's trying to hijack me. It's trying to tell me something's wrong. It's trying to tell me I'm going to push a shopping cart. It's trying to tell me this mosquito bite is lymphoma. I think I feel another lump. Another lump. There's a lump down here. There's lumps everywhere. I'm nuts. I need a big, giant power in my life. I need so much spiritual help. I never, ever will reach the graduation. There is no finishing line. I do not believe that even the most enlightened masters on this planet stay fully treated at all times. I do not believe that Gandhi stayed treated at all times. I look at his little perfect round glasses and how perfectly his loincloth was folded. He didn't walk around like no slob with maybe a hair growing out of his chin. Everything was all shaved and shiny. His ego looked in the mirror every day. I mean, come on. I got to get real here, you know? But, you know, the bottom line is that I continue to try to practice the principles. And it's a hit or a miss. Sometimes I'm still mean. Sometimes I don't like people at all. Sometimes I think, oh, God, not that one. Don't sit her next to me, please. You know what? I'm okay with that. I'm not ashamed to tell you that. I'm not ashamed to tell you that I try to maneuver away from super toxic people. I'm not ashamed. My peace is so valuable to me. It's so valuable to me. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love God. I love my life today. I have an amazing daughter. She's 26 years old. She's in an all-girls band, three-part harmony. They
They play folk Americana. They're on tour right now. She does not have this disease. She does not cut. She does not burn. She does not eat chocolate cake. She is not on psych meds. We have a good relationship. She doesn't drink. She doesn't smoke. She doesn't use drugs. It's not that she's goody two-shoes, but I think she might have seen so much that maybe she got scared. I don't know. She has a big God in her life. I pray for her, and we talk about God all the time. We have a very, very healthy, transparent, open relationship. I never could have done that without these steps in my life as a way of life, because I would have tried to mold her or to get something from her or demand approval or say I'm sorry way too many frickin' times, you know? That stuff gets really old. I've got to be a demonstration. I need to suit up and show up, you know? Get out there and work. I started a business and I started making money and I put her through college and I paid for all her student loans. We both have brand spanking new cars in the driveway. There's money in the account. Her band can go out on tour and I stick several hundred bucks in her bank account on a weekly basis because I want so badly for her to have her musical experience. I'm not saying she's going to be a musician forever. Who the heck knows? But at 25 and 26, go have your, you know, your Los Angeles all-girl band music experience and have it on my dime. You know what? I feel so good to be able to give that to my daughter. I don't think I'm enabling her. I don't think I'm a bad mom. It feels good in my heart to give her things. And she's so appreciative. She knows I came from the streets. She knows I sold my body. She knows I'm in my 38th year with hepatitis C. She knows that I've struggled to survive. She knows that I have demons in my head. She knows that I can make myself so sick. She knows me. She's seen what I go through. And she loves me and she supports me. And you know, that relationship is the most wholesome relationship I have. And if I don't have any other relationship on this planet besides that one, it's plenty. I don't need a whole family. I don't need a bunch of grandkids. I don't need a megapixel billboard. Nobody has to approve of me. I have a God in my life. And I really rightly relate myself to this power. And this power loves me, and I feel it today. In my heart, in my soul, I know how much God loves me. I know that God wants me to be a good AA woman and transmit this message and be of maximum service. If you follow me around with a camcorder, I swear to God, I do not have any skeletons in my closet. I don't have a secret. I'm not hiding something. I don't have blood on my hands. I'm not borrowing, begging, stealing. I'm not doing it today. My life is clean, inside and outside. It's clean, and it's a direct result of these steps. I hope so badly that I said one thing that could happen, somebody, that help somebody in here tonight. And really, thank you all so much for your attention. Thanks so much for listening.